Hi, and welcome to another edition of Tilting at Windmills, the show dedicated to making the world better for fiction. I'm Stephanie Silverstein, writer, thinker, person, soon-to-be-published author. We've got a great show coming up for you tonight, complete with music from Moth, commentary about helping children deal with grown-up issues, and an excerpt from Chapter 4. Stay tuned. As always, we're going to start things off with the publication report. Promotional efforts this week focus more on the podcast than on the novel itself. In the 4 weeks since the podcast has first been broadcast, our numbers have been small. I've registered with various podcast directories all over the internet and told all my friends and family about it. Now it's your turn. If you enjoy listening to this podcast, please make sure to tell all your friends about it, in addition to remembering to tune in every Sunday for a new edition. In the meantime, the two news groups dedicated to Winter Silence on Facebook and MySpace are still going strong, particularly the one on MySpace. This one includes not only updates, but discussion of each week's edition's topic of the week. Make sure to check it out. As for the novel itself, anticipate the release of the ISBN number by the end of January. This will allow you to pre-order on Amazon or at your favorite bookseller. Cover art is still in progress, but hopefully I'll have some preliminary designs for you to view soon. And that's it for the publication report. When we come back, Children and Our Broken World. But first, Maybe Brooklyn by Moth. Once again, that was Maybe Brooklyn by Moth, provided courtesy of the Drift record label on Net Labels. For those of you just tuning in, I'm Stephanie Silberstein, and this is Tilting at Windmills, the show dedicated to changing the world through fiction. And now it's time for the topic of the week. Many editors, agents, and colleagues, well-meaningly enough, have asked me why Winter Silence must be from the point of view of a six-year-old child. After all, a six-year-old viewpoint, life experience, and vocabulary are all limited, making it difficult to express or grapple with difficult issues such as the ones presented in the novel. But this, ladies and gentlemen, is precisely why I've chosen to make Winter Silence from the point of view of six-year-old Emily. Emily deals with several complex issues better addressed by grown-ups throughout the course of the narrative. Anti-Semitism, autism, alcoholism, truth and lies, big and small. The adults in her life either do not have the time to help her deal with these issues, or are too busy trying to protect her from the ills of the world to be able to realize how scary it is for a child to have to face the real world way before she is ready. Unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, this is not something that's limited to a work of fiction. Life has a way of not allowing us to separate our issues into boxes that don't affect children and do affect children. And so, when we as grown-ups are dealing with things such as poverty, disease, depression, alcohol abuse, or any one of a number of serious issues plaguing the world today, our children are bound to be affected. I've seen this even in the 4 months that I've been teaching. Several of my children are dealing with poverty, with parents who have so little money that they cannot afford gas to get their children to school, with violence, with broken family situations. And believe it or not, this causes the children to live with such uncertainty that sometimes it's difficult for them to learn, trust themselves, or to trust the world in general. What can we do to help our children? We obviously can't just throw up our hands and give up and say this is the way the world is and it's not fair, but we're going to have to deal with it, so are our children. But by the same token, there's no way that we can protect them from knowing at a far too early age in this complex world of ours that life is often broken and that there are problems that will face us and them that have no obvious answers. There are two principles to keep in mind here, prevention and damage control. Prevention is more idealistic. One would hope that with the use of rationality and intelligence that people would avoid having children at times that are going to put them in these situations. That at the very least, children would be born into families that can provide for them, and that at the very least, children would not be born into families where the future of the parent relationship is uncertain. We know this is not always the case. Adults may be very well-meaning, but they often make big mistakes, and things such as poverty and violence are not always within one's control, and as a result, children are born into these situations. That brings us to damage control. How can we help our children cope once we've inadvertently put them into a situation that is too big for them to deal with? The first thing is to take a step back from our own lives. We cannot allow things to get to the point that our problems overwhelm us, because we will pass that sense of overwhelm on to our children for several reasons. Number one, because children pick up on their parents' feelings, and some children even feel responsible if their parents are overwhelmed, depressed, or unable to deal with the issues that life presents them. Some children will even think that if they can just be perfect, these issues will be prevented, or that they need to be a certain way in order for mommy and or daddy to be all right. This is not what we want for our children. There's another reason for us not to be overwhelmed, and that is for the sake of the children. They need our reassurance. They need us to be stable. They need to be able to talk to us about the things that they notice. They need to understand what's going on so that it does not become even bigger in their imaginations. I remember some years ago reading a story of a little boy whose parents didn't want to tell him that daddy had lost his job because they didn't want the child to worry. But the child, always hearing grown-ups whisper and seeing them stop when he came in the room, became convinced that the situation was even worse than it was. In his imagination, he had a terminal disease that they didn't want to tell him about and was going to die soon. This is certainly not what we want our children to think. Always deal with them respectfully and tell them exactly what's going on so that they can know what to expect. The other thing we need to do as far as damage control goes is reassure our children. We do not want our children to think that we're in a hopeless situation. Even if we ourselves feel hopeless, we need to communicate a sense to our children that problems are solvable and that we can use our minds to solve them and that we will do so. This not only gives the child a sense of security, but also allows him or her to see how grown-ups actually solve problems. This will be valuable to him or her in the future. It will help this child to not become another statistic. Children who can trust in their own minds and in the world to be stable are less likely to abuse drugs or alcohol or engage in other self-destructive behaviors. I don't have much to say about this issue. I wish I did. There aren't easy solutions. The only thing that I can suggest is to reiterate what I've said. Try to plan ahead so that you don't get into situations that are going to be difficult or complex, particularly when children are involved. And if you do find yourself in such a situation, to take the time to step back, refuse to allow overwhelm or depression to rule your life, and talk to your children about what's going on and what your solutions are going to be. And that's the topic of the week. Be sure to tune in next week where we tackle a big issue of truth and lies and how both affect children. And now for some news headlines. A Saudi terrorism suspect facing possible charges before a military tribunal at Guantanamo has been identified as a brother-in-law as one of the September 11th hijackers. Iraq's Shiite-led government has declared its intention to disband Sunni groups battling Islamic extremists, fearing the creation of a separate military force. In Ontario, California, over 200 people have been found to be living in quote-unquote tent city due to high housing costs. Presidential hopeful John Edwards has suggested $25 to $100 billion be reserved for job creation in order to offset a projected economic downturn. A California family has blamed an HMO for their daughter's death from leukemia after it initially refused to pay for a liver transplant. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Alice Walker has chosen to place her literary archive at Emory's University Library. Italian archaeologists have unearthed a grotto near the church where the tradition of celebrating Christmas on December 25th may have begun. The church may have been built near a pagan shrine as part of an effort to spread Christianity. And finally, in sports, the Steelers beat the Rams 41-24, marking the first 100-yard game against the Rams, as well as the first game the Steelers have played since Willie Parker's leg injury took him out of the season. And that's the news. Stay tuned for this week's excerpt from Chapter 4 of Winter Silence.
When I came into the dining room, Daddy was sitting and staring into the candles. "Daddy," I said, "are you talking to God?"
"What?"
Daddy rubbed his eyes like he was waking up from a dream.
"Of course not. Jews don't pray that way."
"How do they pray?" Mama was coming in the room, so Daddy didn't answer. Instead, he pushed his chair back and said,
"Come on, let's all pitch in to get dinner made. Emily, follow me."
Mama stared hard at me.
"Someone needs to watch Alex." "Sit down and relax then,"
Daddy said.
"Emily and I..."
Mama banged the table so hard the menorah wobbled.
"Relax? Me?"
She laughed.
"Day in, day out, I'm worrying. I'm taking him to doctors. I'm watching him. And you're telling me to relax?"
Daddy's eyes caught fire from the candles.
"Fine. You make dinner then."
Mama's eyes got hard as ice.
"What?"
"Nothing. Emily's not a baby anymore. That's all. Why can't?"
"Because of this afternoon. She can't be trusted. And apparently, neither can you."
Mama took a big breath like Daddy's words punched her in the stomach. She stared down at the table. Daddy turned his fire eyes on me before I could duck.
"You, get in the kitchen."
I ran. I closed the kitchen door behind me and locked it with an invisible lock. Mama said something, but Daddy shouted loud to erase her voice. Alex shrieked once. Then he was quiet. I crawled under the kitchen table. It was a cool cave with a lake in the middle. It made me feel safe. After a long time, it got quiet outside. I poked my head out. I didn't see any monsters. The quiet stayed. I got up and went in the dining room. Alex was under the table. He had made himself flat like a scared cat. No one was paying any attention to him. Instead, Daddy was rubbing Mama's shoulders.
"I know you're overwhelmed," he said. "That's why I thought we'd make you dinner tonight."
I squatted down and tried to pat Alex. He shrieked and slid away. "Be a nice cat," I said.
"Here, Emily."
Daddy got up.
"I'll get your brother."
I crawled out from under the table. Daddy dived in like an undersea explorer looking for treasure. Alex screamed and kicked and even tried to bite. Daddy took him away from the table anyway. The phone rang. Daddy yawned.
I have to get that, he told Mama. It could be a patient. Make sure Alex doesn't retreat back under the table.
Mama's lips got tight, but she just looked at the table and said, okay. I tried to put Alex in a force field with my eyes, but he turned away. My stomach ached of hunger. I rubbed it to keep from growling.
Maybe we can order a pizza, Mama said.
I watched her reflection in the window. Her face looked like it was on too tight. She rubbed the sides of her head like the tightness was hurting her and smiled a pretend smile.
With all this snow, it'll be bedtime before they get it here.
I didn't say anything back. I was too busy listening to Daddy on the phone.
This is Emily's father.
Daddy tapped the phone cord on the wall.
No, I wasn't aware of the situation.
Daddy opened the door and bent his head around it like a snake. Mama was staring at the window without seeing anything. She didn't move.
No, Daddy said. My wife is not available. However, you can talk to me.
He laughed.
I'm an enlightened man. I help with the kids.
I climbed off my seat and turned into the kitchen.
Once again, that excerpt was from Chapter 4 of Winter Silence, which will be available in June. I hope you enjoyed it and also enjoyed tonight's program. I'd like, as always, to thank my family and friends for supporting me as I endeavor to bring Winter Silence off the ground. I'd also, as always, like to thank the people at Open Audio Source and NetLabels for the use of their music, and especially you, my listeners. If you have any feedback, positive, negative, or in between, please send me an email at stephanie@stephaniesilberstein.com. I would love to include you in the program and read your comments on the air. You may also post comments directly to the blog at heroicmuse.wordpress.com. Be sure to tune in next week, where we will tackle the large-scale issue of lies and truth and how they affect children, as well as featuring new music and an excerpt from Chapter 5. Until then, this is Stephanie Silberstein for Tilting at Windmills, asking you what you can do to make the world a better place. Have a good night and a happy holiday season.